We have a dream.
We have a voice.
This is
The Anchor Nation.
The Anchor Nation.
The Anchor Nation.
The Anchor Nation.
Hi, I am your host, Kevin Touch, and we are
The Anchor Nation.
Well, Anchor Nation, this is Kevin Touch, host of Anchor Nation Community Radio, and we're back with another episode of the Anchor Nation Podcast, episode 91 with Kyle Grappone. He's a motivational speaker to the youth, a self-proclaimed marketer, and really a humble guy who likes to ask the question, not what will you be, but what kind of person you will be when you grow up. Had a great time and chat with him. Hope you enjoy. Hello, Anchor Nation. This is Kevin Touch, the host of Anchor Nation Community Radio, and we're back with another episode of the Anchor Nation Podcast, episode 91 with Kyle Grappone. Now, without further ado, I'll let Kyle introduce himself.
Hi, everybody. My name's Kyle, and I'm a youth motivational speaker and soon-to-be book author. My new book, To the Next Step, is available right now for pre-order, but I'm sure we'll get into that in a few minutes. I've been doing speaking for about a year, and I've been working in the corporate world, so to speak, for about 10 years, which really kind of started my journey. So that's a little background on me.
Awesome, Kyle. We're going to definitely get into this. And our first main talking point is, how do you use your message on social media? What's your message on social media to your fans and audience?
Sure. So my message is twofold. A lot of what I post, whether it be my blog posts or my social media posts, a lot of it talks to, one, students, really just kind of getting them to, you know, take things in life a little more seriously and think about the future and point out topics that they might not really think about or understand, such as, you know, surviving your first month in college or, you know, how to take advantage of your internship. But I also like to produce content and share it on social media and talk to people of my generation, because those are the people who work in the schools, who have you know, relatives who are going to be going to school soon, or, you know, try and talk to a little bit of an older generation because they have children who are going to be going through it. And, you know, they're kind of the decision makers. So I also try to produce some content that says, you know, hey, like, this is what I'm talking about and this is valuable for you. But I'm also trying to, you know, help your kids and your relatives as well. So I try to find a balance when using social media.
I like that, because kids also can use social media too to profit off stuff, or you just make a good resume and internship, like you said. And I guess my next talking point would be, what have you seen from the parents, let's say of the millennial generation, to now more the up-and-comer Gen Z generation? What are the comparisons, and what are the things you see from when you were a kid going through school to now, and what their mindset are?
Sure. So this is a really interesting point. I'm glad you brought this up, because one of the chapters in my book is called The Millennial Problem, and with a question mark. And I think that millennials are very misunderstood. And yes, I am one of them, so you can kind of take that with a grain of salt. But I think what's different between when I was growing up, and certainly when our parents were growing up, as opposed to now, is that nowadays, this generation is so in tune and so aware of all of the problems and issues in this world. And I'll give you an example. Anytime there is a tragedy, anywhere in the world, it's on social media instantly.
Right.
And there's pictures and there's videos. And any, you know, every single time there's, you know, a refugee crisis or a water shortage or a wildfire or, you know, a third world country going through a genocide. You know, 20 years ago, 1998, like, I didn't know that stuff was going on. The internet was brand new. There was no social media. Information wasn't shared. So I think this generation is so in tune to the problems that need to be fixed. And then if they end up going to a job that is, you know, kind of being, you know, your paper pusher, or you're kind of setting meetings, or you're making millionaires into billionaires, I think that's where they really fall short. And I think they really want to do more to fix kind of the issues of the world, because they're so, you know, inundated with it, because there's always something on Facebook or something on Twitter. And I don't think that really gets talked about a lot. I think a lot of people like to talk about millennials and say that they're selfish or they're lazy. And I don't think that's the case. I also think that, you know, I'm also a marketing professional. And one thing that in marketing we're always looking for is content, because there's so many different places in the world now to get content, that everybody's racing to create something to get your attention for 10 seconds. So creating a problem with millennials, creating the millennial problem, is a goldmine for content. Because if you say you're going to focus on that this month, now all of a sudden you have 20 different pieces of content, you know, right? It's like five reasons you should hire millennials, five reasons you should hire millennials, 10 reasons why millennials won't stay, 20 reasons why they will stay. And, you know, you just kind of see all this content. You're like, wow, there must be really a problem. And I don't think there is as much. I just think that we've kind of attacked this generation because they are waking up and saying, you know what, like, I'm not necessarily going to work at the same place for 20 years. I'm not necessarily going to, you know, be happy with just a paycheck or be grateful for it. If I'm not learning, if I'm not growing, I'm going to move on. And the last point before I don't really want to get in the weeds too much on this, but the last point that people don't understand when they attack millennials for switching jobs so quickly is that more than any other generation, there's the ability to switch jobs through LinkedIn. And what I mean by that is that every day I'm getting messages, you know, from recruiters saying, you know, are you interested in switching jobs? Are you interested in having a conversation about this position? And I'm not anything special, right? But what's happening is that these recruiters are using LinkedIn and they're going to these students who are a year in, maybe less. They have a ton of student loan debt. And they're saying to them, hey, you want to join this job and we'll pay you $5,000 more? And if you're not into the job and you don't really like it to begin with and you're, you know, drowning in debt, you're probably going to move on pretty quicker. And then, you know, 6 months later at that job, if you're not happy, somebody else is kind of trying to poach you away. And I think that ease of switching jobs, which wasn't there, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, really doesn't get talked about enough. So to answer your question in a very long-winded way,
no worries.
You really touched on something there for me. I think the biggest difference is that we are going through this massive shift that we as a generation want what we do to matter and solve specific problems. And we're willing to wait it out in a sense, as opposed to older generations who were kind of more okay with, you know, I went to work, I worked at the same place for 40 years and I was happy with that. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I just think the information flow and the ease of moving jobs has changed the entire game. And that's a technology thing more than it is a generational issue.
No, you're absolutely right, Kyle, because the way the world works with the power of LinkedIn, the power of social media, the power of any platform, is people are definitely looking to scope out talent. It's almost like you have to know the talent's coming from somewhere, because that's what the recruiters do. Of course, they want to get that quick fix for the people in debt, but the way the world does work and the way everything shifts from more, hey, we're just switching jobs like it's nothing, like it's easy, it may not add up to what the older generation thinks. Like, I've been here for 40, 50 years, stable. And that's that old adage we'll get to maybe more in the book. You'll talk about just stability versus versatility and having agility in your job placement. But for my next question would be, what's your role as a motivational speaker? What can you dive into a little bit about more, some speaking events you've done in the past or some things that really got you into the motivational speaking gig?
Sure. So I've always been a very outgoing person. You know, I used to do in high school, I did some stand-up comedy. So being on stage never really bothered me. Being out in the open and being a representative never bothered me. And I think it was probably about a year and a half ago, I started to realize that I didn't want to sit at a desk anymore. The desk job, the 9-to-5 life wasn't for me. I was missing out on too much. I think that there's a really big problem in corporate America where we value the quantity of time you sit at a desk over your quality of work. Because I think if you bust your ass for 7.5 hours, but you leave early, you kind of get scolded, as opposed to if you do nothing for 8 hours, you're going to get rewarded because, oh, you were there till 5. So I started to look at, well, you know, what do I want to do? And one of the things I kind of realized was that the reason I was in this position is because I was never very serious in high school. My grades were like, okay, but they weren't great. And the same thing happened in college. And I graduated both because, again, I was okay, but I wasn't anything special about it. And I kind of found myself working in an office where if I had really listened to myself years ago, I never would have went into an office because I was never that type of person. And the more I kind of, you know, so I kind of was thinking about that. Well, okay, so what would I want to do for a living? And coupled with the fact that, you know, I've been in corporate America for almost 10 years, and it appeared to me that, you know, year after year or day after day or whatever job I was in, there was always a large amount of people who were just kind of like unsatisfied with themselves and unsatisfied with their life, and they were miserable, and they were always, you know, wishing the week away and waiting for Friday, and then, you know, not really realizing, you know, that they were kind of just wishing everything away. And I was like, you know, why is this? Like, why is everybody so miserable? And why does everybody think that, you know, this is okay? So So I really started looking into this more, and that's when I realized that high school and college students are not really prepared for what comes next in life. You know, I don't think high school students understand how much of your future is affected by your college choice, by your choice of student loans, by your choice of major. And I don't think college students understand that there's all these opportunities that you should be taking advantage of, but they don't understand how they're prevalent to them. So they kind of let them pass by. I mean, I did it, and a lot of people I talked to while I researched this before I kind of launched it felt the same way. So for me, in my speaking engagements, and I have two very big ones coming up, you know, in the next 2 months in two colleges in New York, you know, it's really going to be focused on taking advantage of the opportunities that are in front of you. But more importantly, figuring out how those opportunities are going to help you. You know, everybody says to network, but I break down, what does that mean for you? You know, what does that mean for somebody who wants to be, you know, an actor someday, as opposed to somebody who wants to be an accountant someday? You know, what do, you know, what does that mean? And also, I came to the realization that one of the biggest problems we have is that we ask students all the time, we ask kids from a very young age, what do you want to be when you grow up? And for me, that's a fundamentally flawed question, because you can't really ask somebody what they want to be when they grow up when they don't understand the options. Mm-hmm. So for me, and one of the cornerstones of my talks is, we should be asking students, what type of person do you want to become? Because when we ask that question, everything changes. You open up to a whole kind of, you know, valley of different opportunities. So you're not necessarily pigeonholed to one job, but you can say, well, I want to be somebody who helps people. Okay, well, here's the different types of careers and jobs, and here's who you should be talking to if you want to do those careers, and here's the types of majors you might be interested in. Or I want to be somebody who entertains people. Or I think a lot of people, you know, need to understand that if, you know, if in high school, if you hate sitting at a desk and you hate, you know, doing that work, and you're happiest when you're working in your, you know, family garage, or you're building stuff around the house, like, maybe you shouldn't go to college. I mean, maybe you should go to a trade school, or maybe you should take a year off and work full time, build up some money, and figure out how you're going to apply this love for building things into, you know, some sort of career. Because the other thing is that we've demonized trade schools in this country. And, you know, we need electricians, we need plumbers, we need people right. to do the what I call the real work. I have a good friend who owns a construction company and has a business on the side. And, you know, he went to college, and he said, listen, he goes, I went because my dad wanted me to go, but it was a waste of time. He goes, I got great, good grades, but I didn't want to sit in an office. I'm a builder. It's what I do. And, you know, we've kind of made it seem like, oh, everybody needs to go to college. And that's not the case, like, at all. You know, that's a lot of the stuff that I try to hit on in my talks.
It's very, you bring up a lot of great points, especially about not asking people, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because think about it, when you ask somebody at 10 years old, what do you want to be when you grow up? And what's the actual answer? Because you're still building character as you go. And then going back to the trade school thing, I guess the follow, would you say in your area up there, up in the north, the New Jersey tri-state area, do you say the value of trade schools a little bit higher there compared to like the rest of the country, or do you feel it's just about the same everywhere?
I mean, I don't know about the value, but I can tell you that if a high school student came to me, and obviously I would be prepared before a talk, but if you were to ask me right now, where's my nearest trade school of any kind in New Jersey, I wouldn't even be able to tell you who to talk to, because I don't know anybody that does it. And so to me, if I can tell you, if I can rattle off 10 colleges and 5 certificate programs, and if I can rattle off, you know, all these other places that exist, but I don't know where a trade school is, I mm-hmm. can't see it being, you know, terribly prevalent. And again, it's not necessarily, okay, I definitely want to go to trade school, but, you know, if you're a high school student and you're, you know, done with your freshman year and you're like, wow, I'm miserable and I don't want to do any of this. Like, rather than, you know, taking a job as a supermarket clerk, you know, right. why not try to, you know, latch on to get some summer work with an electrician or a plumber and ride around with them and decide, like, is this the type of life I want? Like, it's a long day. I'm always on my feet. But if you come home and you're like, wow, I had a good time today, or wow, like, it was hard work, but I really made a difference. That's something that you should pursue. And then, you know, again, there's a ton of different options. Maybe you go to a trade school. Maybe you go to a community school that has some sort of program. Like, you know, again, I don't have all the answers. But I'm empowering people because the internet gives you all the answers, right? So all you need to do is figure out what the question is. And if the question is, how do I build a career where I don't have to sit at a desk and I can build things? Well, okay, here's your different avenues and you can kind of, you know, figure that out.
That's important. I think having those options and leading to the right one you choose, it could fluctuate, but like you said, going around, you'll know. Knowing in school, if you don't like that work stuff at the desk and you want to be hands-on, go take that year off, figure out your life a little bit, work around with the house, keep playing around, keep testing, and know you can still keep going because you're at 19, 20, and it's the best time of your life to keep trying things for sure. And now we'll transition a little bit just before we touch on the book. Since you said you're into more marketing and just not recruiting, but just more marketing and sales kind of deal, would you say, as kids, what's the best marketing strategy for a kid other than social media in just overall in their avenue? Would you say there's a specific thing you look for if you're trying to hire somebody in marketing, if they're going to choose that path, or is it just kind of as we see with the resume?
I would say a few things. I would say, obviously, if I'm hiring somebody in marketing, I want to see, even if they're fresh out of college, I want to see what have they done in their internships. And I want to see what kind of platforms have they used. So have they used something called, you know, a CRM, a customer retention management platform? Have they used some sort of email platform? Have they posted social media? And if they did post social media for a company, what were they posting? What was the theme? Anything that tells me that they kind of understand what marketing is, because marketing is not just posting on social media. It's finding your brand voice and speaking to people in a way that they will respond to you and engage with you. Not necessarily buy from you. That's another step.
Right.
So that's, you know, and I would say anybody who's interested in marketing, because I would say out of all the office jobs, marketing is the most fun. And almost every company has a marketing department. But I would say to somebody who's currently a marketing major or trying to get into marketing but having a problem, you know, or they're in high school and they're thinking about marketing – if you ask around enough, you will always find somebody who has some sort of business that they're trying to get off the ground, whether it be a side hustle, whether it be, you know, they're a hair cutter on the side, they right. fix old cars, their cousin has a bakery, you know, large and small. You can always find people with small side businesses. And if you understand the fact that you'll have to probably do it for free at first, if you connect with them and you offer to be their marketing consultant and just do something as simple as, you know, I send out the email once a month and I do some social media and I call different venues and set up events. That is huge because immediately that's going to tell me if I'm trying to hire you, like you took the initiative, you want to learn your craft. But more importantly, if I'm looking at two people and you both have internships, but one of you does pro bono consulting work for different types of small businesses, that second person is almost always going to win, at least for me in my book. So I would say to anybody who's trying to get into marketing is always try to find ways to increase your skill set and get real world experience. There's a website that I always recommend to people. It's called lynda.com, but it was purchased by LinkedIn. So you may want to Google LinkedIn Learning Solutions because that's probably the brand it's going to go under now. Right. It's about $30 a month. But you can learn any kind of marketing skill. You can learn marketing fundamentals. You can learn social media, Google Analytics, a number of things. And just getting the basics, some of those basic beginner courses under your belt and understanding that and being able to articulate ideas in an interview is definitely going to put you ahead of anybody.
I think you hit it right on the head. Just get experience. And I think that's really the key. It doesn't matter if it's free or you're doing limited things because that's still experience because all that will build up in your resume. And would you say what would be the value as far as like a percentage? Do you think is it like 80-20 experience versus just sitting around or sitting around and figuring out as you go, or is it more get experience and then let it play out as you go further along your college career? What would you say the experience of internships and experience would be?
I would say to try to get as many internships as can fit into your schedule. I mean, obviously okay. You don't want to overload yourself. You want to make sure you're putting enough into your classes, but there's really no reason, like I'll put it to you this way. If your school says you need to take one internship and you decide okay, this summer I'm going to focus on this internship and I'm not going to work too much. I'm just going to focus on this. And you have to get a certain amount of hours. Like that's fine, but there's really no reason why each summer you can't do some sort of internship. I mean, where I work now, I have a great woman. She's in her early 20s, and she came to me and she was like, listen, I got my requirements out of the way. I just want to come in a few hours a week. She comes about, you know, 5 to 10 hours a week and does some marketing work for us pro bono. She's an intern, but she showed that initiative and she's going to have another internship on her resume. And I really think that there's no reason why you can't, you know, go to your career center and say, listen, I want to intern 5 to 10 hours a week. Where can I do that? And maybe you don't do that every semester, right? Like maybe if you know you have an easier semester coming up, you don't do that, but they can connect you with somebody that may not have enough work for a full-time intern, because a lot of interns to get credit have to do, I think, like 130 hours. So there might be companies that don't have that, but if you try hard enough, you can find a company that will take an intern, because they're not paying you. But it's then up to you to make sure that you're getting something out of it. You're asking as many questions as possible, because payment comes in more forms than just currency. You know, exactly. Like you can not get paid for something in cash form, but if you make a connection, if you impress somebody, if somebody takes you aside and says, here, I'm going to teach you how to launch a social media campaign, or I'm going to teach you this, or I'm just going to let you listen in on my calls, you know, so you understand how to speak to people, how to manage a team. I mean, that's invaluable. You might not be getting paid for it, but I mean, because that's one of the things that I kind of regret. I mean, I had one internship. And my internship, honestly, I mean, I chose to do a nonprofit because I wanted to do a nonprofit, but a lot of people wanted to see internships in New York City, for example, because it was a bigger hub. Now, I couldn't necessarily afford to do that, but I would say that when you're choosing your main internship, like that ones that's required, you want to make sure that you're choosing a brand that is kind of well-known, and if not well-known, something that you know you're going to really grow in. You know, you really want to ask a lot of questions like, what am I going to be doing for you? Because, you know, if you get stuck in an internship where you're, you know, just kind of, you know, compiling Excel sheets or planning meetings, like, yeah, there's always going to be some of that grunt work. But you want to make sure that you're going somewhere that, you know, is reputable when somebody's looking at where you were, you know, looking at that company's website. It's reputable and you're also doing something, you know, of value.
I think that's the key, Kyle, and you hit it right on the head, is getting something other than cash. And that's the key. I think if you can understand that you're going to get knowledge, you're going to get some type of valuable information, and most importantly, you're giving time, that your time's going to come back from the universe. It really truly will, because at the end of the day, you do this for long enough and you get that job right away as you want to do, you're going to look back at those internships today saying, thank God I put the investment time into it, for sure. No. And the next point...
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
No, for sure. You're excellent. And the next point before we get onto the book is kind of a more to follow up here. Would you also say, knowing all this information, do you think some internships, like what would you like to see in the internship game, if anything, that would change for employees, future employees? You think there's anything that's going through your knowledge that you could have done different or future students could do different to avoid any mistakes through the internship?
I think a few things. I mean, if you're asking me what I would like to see change in the internship game, is I'd like to see interns get paid. Okay. I don't think there's any reason why you can't pay an intern minimum wage, because chances are they're living at home. So minimum wage to them is not too bad, you know, especially if you're asking them to come in full time, or if you're asking them to come in 20, 25 hours a week, because that's taking away from money that they could be making. And I think some people... I would imagine some students probably turn down internships because they have to work because of their financial situation. And I think that's really a shame. So I would love to see interns get paid, especially summer interns. I think that's very reasonable, especially, like I said, you know, minimum wage for anybody working over 15, 20 hours. But I don't know if we're going to see that. Maybe that's something we can kind of push for. But I think, you know, for me, in my internships, I think I really kind of – I don't know. I didn't really understand how this was going to benefit me down the road. Like, I think I kind of did it because I had to do it, but I don't think I really understood that, like, hey, this is going to be your main talking point when you're in interviews, you know, because you always want to have, I have always felt on my resume, I always wanted that one standout piece that I could talk about in interviews. Like, for example, you know, when I got into marketing, I worked for a couple of small time companies. They probably won't like that I said that, but it doesn't matter. you know, and then I went to a large company in New York City. And they are, you know, still around, billion-dollar company, huge brand in the advertising technology space. And I know that any marketing interview I go on, like, that's my piece. I was there for 2 years. I did a lot. I got promoted. And that's, you know, that's my crown jewel of my resume right now. So anywhere I ever go, I can always go back to that. But when you're out of college, you don't have much to go on. You know, I think it's good if you were, you know, worked in, you know, work study, and if you were in student government or the admissions office or anything like that. But that internship, especially if you only took one, is really your crown jewel. And you really want to say, this is what I did there. And if you didn't really do much or ask to take on more or kind of push yourself, and you just, you know, did it because you needed to do the hours, then you're not going to have a lot to talk about. I think my internship, I did some cool stuff, but I think if I had known how important it would be in the interview process, I probably would have taken advantage of that opportunity. And that's exactly what the book is about. It's about, you know, knowing that that internship is a great opportunity, but students aren't going to know how great the opportunity is unless they know how it's going to affect the rest of their life.
End of the day, you're right. You have to, you're limited in college, of course, and you don't have every sort of thing you can do where you're just kind of free ranging. But the one that you can do is just utilize that time and utilize that preference to keep going, whether you're not paid or not. But like you said, hopefully that will change one day. And now we'll get to the book because you mentioned it. So what was the inspiration? What was the first thing that really just inspired you to write the Next Level book?
Sure. So it's called To the Next Step. And basically, you know, I've been kind of pitching myself as a motivational speaker for probably since January. You know, that's kind of when I went live with everything. And I've gotten some interest and I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. And like I said, I have two pretty big keynotes at two New York colleges coming up at the end of this year. So, you know, we're definitely going in the right direction. But I wasn't getting, you know, a lot of gigs right away. And I was getting a lot of people who didn't really answer or had kind of said to me, well, I want to hear you speak, things like that. And I realized, you know, because I've written so many blogs, which can be found at my website, kyleg.us. And, you know, I've written so many blogs. I mean, I've written blogs I haven't even posted. And I've had my keynotes that I've written and my workshops that I've written. And I have so many things that I've written. And it's just sitting on this computer. And I said to myself, I said, you know what? I said, you have this message. You believe in this message. You're passionate in this message. I said, you have to get it out there. I said, and if you wait for other people to book you, I'm giving other people permission. Basically, I'm letting other people give me permission to speak. And I don't want to do that because it's 2018. And there's no reason why my message shouldn't be out there.
Right.
So I, you know, started the process of, you know, pretty quickly realizing, well, I'm going to take all this stuff I've been writing about and I'm going to write a book. And the book, you know, like I said, it's called To the Next Step because everything I talk about is about the next step in your life, whether it be high school students going into college or college students going into the real world. And it's really an instruction manual. You know, we start off in chapter one, which is called The Part of Life You Don't See Coming, which I talked about earlier. You know, where I really talk about here's what's coming. And I know this because I'm living through it right now. And here's what you can do to kind of, you know, prepare yourself. And here's most importantly, here's why you should do all this. And then we kind of go into, you know, high school and college and this college selection process and, you know, taking advantage of the college experience and then, you know, preparing for your senior year. And it's a journey that goes from, you know, identifying the problem all the way to, all right, you know, now this is, you know, the last chapter is called This Is Where I Leave You, because it's, all right, like you have my book now and I've warned you in a sense and I've told you everything that I know and everything that a number of people I've interviewed for the book know. And, you know, it's going to be up to you now. So my hope is that, you know, high school and college students who are already inspired to think differently and already inspired to be more, you know, find this book and see this book and say, hey, you know what, like this guy, I want to do more and he's going to kind of help me learn how. I'm also hoping that if, you know, there's parents out there, educators out there who are having a tough time reaching their kids, reaching their, you know, students,
right,
that they can take this book and they can read it themselves and it kind of, you know, arms them with knowledge to talk to their kids. But also, you know, it's a great gift for students. I think it's something you can give a student, you know, as a gift for going away to college or a new year gift or a Christmas gift, because it's relatable at any age. I think, you know, anywhere in your high school college experience is relatable. Even if you're in college and you've passed through high school, there's definitely value in reading the high school years, because if you didn't do what I'm telling you to do, you kind of have to make up for it in some way. So yeah, I mean, that was kind of the, the idea for the book, and you know, I was pretty confident in it from day one. And I connected with a startup company called Publishizer with a Z. And I would say anybody that's interested in writing a book should check this website out. You know, I don't want to give them, you know, a free ad or anything, but they are a book publishing connector, if you will. And I worked with them, and now we have a pre-order campaign going on. So my pre-order campaign, so the link to it is a bit lengthy, but I'm pretty sure, Kevin, we can put that link in the
description.
Description. But also, you can go to my website, which is kyleg.us, and immediately will pop up the video for the pre-order campaign. So it's me talking about the book for about 4 minutes, and then there's a big red button where you can kind of read the rest of the synopsis and place a pre-order. We have a bunch of bonuses going on, which I think are pretty cool. For example, if you're a company and you order 10 or more books, I come to your company free of charge and perform an intern workshop and work with your interns and do kind of a classroom workshop style event. If you, you know, buy, again, if you buy 20 books or more, you buy 50 books or more, we have different types of bonuses. For example, if you buy, I believe, 10 or more books, I will get on a 30-minute call and talk marketing strategy with you. And that's transferable to any contact. So if you're a teacher and you want to buy 10 books for your class and you have a brother who has a small business, I'll get on the phone with him and give him, you know, a free 30-minute kind of consultation with marketing. If you buy, I think it was 20 books, you know, you get an hour. And, you know, of course, if you're an educator, if you buy 50 books, I come and do a workshop for free. If you buy 100 books, I'll come and do a keynote assembly for free. And there's a couple more deluxe packages where if you buy, you know, a large amount of books, I come for the day and, you know, we'll do keynotes and we'll do classroom workshops and, you know, I'll do what you want me to do. And I'll talk to whoever you want me to talk to in your student body. That type of, you know, offer. So, yeah. So like I said, I mean, the link's in the description and I would go to, you know, kyleg.us for, you know, the video and to access the link pretty easily there.
Yeah, no, definitely. We'll figure that out post call before publishing, get you all the links to the viewers out there. But definitely check out Publishers as a good, not an advertiser, because like Kyle said, but just a good recommendation for books. Now, you actually answered the question actually with marketing too, how you're marketing the book in a sense that you got these deluxe packages. But other than that, anything else you were doing on the marketing side of the book to just reach new audiences other than like teachers and educators? Or do you feel like this is a book that anyone could even profit off of, even if they're like 25 and still in med school or something?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really going to be mostly prevalent for high school and college students. I think, however, I think everybody knows a high school or college student and cares about at least one. So if you care, if you have a high school or college student in your life that you care about, or if you know somebody in middle school that's going to be going to high school soon, like this is a great book. Like you pick it up and you give it as a gift. And then, you know, my hope is that that person reads it and then gives it to somebody else. And then, you know, The whole point is that the book, you know, the more books that are out there, that means that if there's 100 books out there, that means I'm speaking 100 times. And, you know, I can get my message out there. You know, there's 100 of me speaking at once, as opposed to just limiting it to myself. But as far as the marketing aspect, I mean, I'm lucky because I get marketing. I've talked to people who wrote a book and they're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I don't get any of this. You know, I know somebody who, you know, I spoke to her the other day and she's got a great book. And you know, she was like, oh, you know, I struggle with the marketing aspect. And I'm like, no, I'm like, you're going to be okay. Cause you have a great product. You'll be able to figure it out. But for me, you know, I do a lot of social media. I'm going to be starting today with the chapter preview series. So I'm going to preview each chapter in a little video and put that on social media. And just trying to connect with, you know, people like yourself who are willing to have me on to talk about it. But one of the really exciting things that I have going on, and I would, if you want to keep up with everything, I would, again, you know, check out my website, but I would also check out my Facebook page, Kyle Grappone. Motivational speaker. You should find it pretty easily because I don't think there's another Kyle Grappone in America, to be honest. So I should pop up pretty easily. And check that out because I will be hosting a webinar in connection with a company. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it just yet because we haven't inked it, but I'll be hosting a webinar for high school students at the end of the month to kind of go over, you know, preparing them for the high school year. And then, of course, we'll be kind of talking about the book and how that fits in there. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, my contact base, family, friends who have been super supportive already. Thank you to anybody listening to this who's already placed a pre-order. I really, really appreciate that. You know, between that, the webinar, a couple other pieces I'm doing with this company. And then lastly, I have, you know, a speaking engagement at Mount St. Mary College in Newburgh, New York, first week of September in front of at least 200 students. So I'm really, really excited for that. That's my alma mater. That's where I went to college. So I'm kind of going back and trying to help these kids, you know, understand the opportunities that are in front of them. And hopefully, you know, they'll want to purchase the book and keep it with them throughout their years. But other than that, you know, it's just kind of word of mouth. And I'm hoping that, you know, people who, you know, have the ability to help do step forward and help. And people have already been very helpful. So, you know, I know that if I keep plugging through it, I know God's going to take care of the rest for me. So I'm not too worried about that. Just got to keep pushing.
Good strategy. Just keep going, keep trying new things, and be there. Now, and we'll wrap up this final question about the book, and then we'll move on to something else. What would you say is the one chapter for anyone out there, whether it be in high school or college, like we mentioned, that you should focus on of the chapters you've done?
I would say the first chapter, because the first chapter sets the tone for the book. And if you don't understand or you don't agree with the first chapter, then you're not going to agree with the rest of the book. Because again, the first chapter is talking about the problem. There is a problem because there's too many people that are miserable and dislike their jobs. And when you don't like your job, you're not passionate at it. And there's too many people who want to be doing something else but aren't because they're scared or it's too late because they're financially restricted from doing those type of things. So I would say if you're a student, you bought this book and you read it through, I would say at least once a year, at the beginning of every school year, read that first chapter and understand this is what's coming. And again, I'm not, you know, somebody asked me once, well, you know, you're doom and gloom and you're making it seem like being an adult is awful. And I was like, no, not at all. Like, I'm not trying to scare anybody. Like somebody accused me of that once, like, oh, you're trying to scare people. I was like, no, I'm not. I was like, but we got to be real here. You know, like, you know, your job is a huge part of your life. Like, I understand it doesn't have to take over your whole life and doesn't have to define you. But, you know, if you look at your life, you know, and you're working 40 hours, 50 when you include the commute, plus any kind of overtime, depending on what industry you're in, you know, and then you don't have the time during the day anymore to do the adult stuff, you know, and when you move out, there's a lot more adult stuff and you can't switch jobs as easily because you got more bills than you did when you were younger. So I just think that people need to understand that because once they do, they're like, okay, like I understand, like I have to work full time, but how can I make sure that what I'm doing falls in line with who I want to be? And if you, you know, are going throughout high school and you know, I want to be somebody who helps people. That's my calling in life. I want to be somebody who helps people. And every decision you make has that person in mind. You know, you will end up hopefully with a job that you like. I'm not saying it's going to be a job you love, but a job that you like, but more importantly, a life that you love, where you can come home at the end of the day and some days you'll be frustrated, some days you'll still be upset, and some days you'll, you know, not like your job. But for the most part, you'll say, you know what, I help people, and I've built a pretty good career around that. But you have to start young when all those opportunities are in front of you, and I think that's what the first chapter really tackles. So I think anybody who buys this book, student-wise, you know, at least once a year, maybe every 6 months, to just read that chapter and understand why you're doing, you know, what you're doing and kind of understand what's coming, you know, in the next steps of your life.
That truly is it. I mean, you got to start young. You got to take the advantages now when you're younger, because when you get older, you'll have more responsibilities where it's not as easily focused and driven. And plus you have the most energy now when you're younger. As you get older too, it's like, well, what's the energy going to come from when you're 35 and you got all this stress coming? So I understand what you're saying for sure. Now we transition into more of this real world stuff. What are some things you see with this when you go to these keynote speeches, kind of what you're doing? What are some things you see from the keynote speeches you do that you try to incorporate with real world events?
I think, you know, when I'm building my speeches, I think that I'm trying to, how do I put this? I'm trying to relate some of the things that go on in the world to what I'm trying to tell these kids. For example, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things in this world that need to be fixed. We have a lot of issues. And I think that it's important to understand that if you care about one of these issues deeply, then that's what you should be thinking about when you're making your decisions. Like, if you really care about, you know, the refugee crisis or the immigrant, you know, situation, or, you know, children's cancer or, you know, stray dogs, you know, because there are serious problems. And we have a lot of people who just focus on making as much money as possible,
right,
working for a big company or big conglomerate. But, you know, there are a lot of issues. And I think it's important, you know, for example, like if you want to be a lawyer, but you also know that you want to help, maybe you want to help, you know, immigrants gain their legal status, for example, like, yeah, going to a law firm that represents, you know, billion-dollar companies will probably pay you more. But if you're working 16 hours a week to get people out of trouble, you know, you're going to look back on that 40 years later and you're going to be like, I have all this money and I don't have any happiness, or I don't have any memories to talk about, you know, as opposed to, you know, it may pay less. But if you, you know, work at a, you know, law firm that does, you know, pro bono work for, you know, immigrants, or pro bono work for, you know, single mothers or whatever it may be, you may not have as much money, but you will probably have done more meaningful work. And if you're somebody that wanted to help people, or you're somebody that wanted to help these types of people, you're going to be a lot happier. So I try to point that out, because we need people to follow their passions, because we have too many people who follow, you know, what their parents tell them to do, or what, you know, the mainstream media tells them to do, or what a website like Glassdoor tells them to do, because it's like, oh, look at how high this salary is, you know. And there's always going to be people who are going to chase the money, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't hate anybody for any kind of life decision they make, but we need more students. If you truly want to, you know, do these type of things and help people and heal people and take outside the box jobs, like, we need you to do that, because those types of jobs are there. There's a need there, but people aren't doing that anymore. So that's what I guess if you're talking about current events, that's what I try to point out.
Outside the box. Yeah. Because that is a cool and an also interesting decision. Some people, and it could even be considered a juxtaposition, because you have people out there who have their, I'm kind of saying we're selfish, but they have the ways of this, want to make money and don't really give back to society. And then you got the people who maybe they're not getting the money they want, but they are giving back to society. They are taking time to think outside the box, help with these natural causes, in a sense, natural campaigns that's not violent or anything too overbearing, and peacefully get it done. And then eventually they'll get the reward at the end of the year, or at the end of the cycle, because you do good things, the universe pays it back. So that's important, just to think outside the box, look at those ideas, and be open-minded. I think that is another thing. Just be open-minded to whatever comes your way and try to help out as much as possible, and be passionate about what you're doing, for sure. And for the next question here, Kyle, how has your family impacted you growing up through your school years and now where you are now?
I think the way my family's impacted me is that one of the things that my father always said to me growing up is that, you know, enjoy the little things in life, because if you wait for the big things, you're going to be waiting a long time. And I always took that to heart, and I always enjoy the smallest things in life. I always make, you know, my wife laugh, because, you know, one of the weird things about me is I love a good hotel room. And people are like, what are you talking about? That makes no sense. And I don't know how to describe it, but, you know, I love a good hotel room. It's the backbone of any trip. It's where you spend your time. It's also a place you don't have to clean up, so that's always fun. But, you know, it's something I like, you know, and I always enjoy the little things in life. I always enjoy, you know, I remember, you know, I went to a Jets game a couple of years ago and they got killed, but I don't remember the score. I just remember, you know, being in the parking lot with my friends, you know, eating a steak sandwich, throwing around a football. And just because it's the little things in life, and it's just, those are the things that I remember, and those are the things I enjoy. You know, I don't remember making a big payday or getting a big paycheck. I remember, you know, laughing with my friends in the break room or whatever. You know, so I think, you know, that's from my, you know, from my father's side. And I just think my mother always taught me, I just always kind of taught me to be a good person, and was just always kind of teaching me that, you know, you should do what you know is right, not necessarily what everybody else is doing. So I think that they kind of always, you know, taught me that. And nowadays, you know, I had a conversation with my mother not too long ago, and I was kind of frustrated with what was going on. And, you know, because I have my full-time job, and then I work another, you know, 5 or 6 hours in the evening on this. And, you know, I kind of said to her, I said, you know, I could just be working 12-hour days at a company somewhere and be making six figures and just, you know, kill myself for that company instead of kill myself for nothing. And she told me, she was like, you know, don't give up on your dreams. She's like, don't give up on your passions because you're going to regret it if you don't go for it now. And those are, I think, the two big things, you know, that I've kind of taken away from them.
Do the right thing. Never give up on your passion. That is the standard definition in my not just my opinion, but the world's opinion of go with your gut, man. End of the day, anyone listening out there, go with what you think is right. Of course, learn from your family as much as possible, but appreciate that this is the one passion or one life you get, and that one passion you're doing. It may seem dark. It may always seem like, what happened? Just give it some time. Be patient. And the lightness always comes through. It always shines. So it's important just to never give up and always look at the bright side, in the sense that this will all work out if you just stay patient, persistent, and keep that consistency rolling, for sure. Great advice, Kyle. And our next question deals with just collaborative efforts. If you could collaborate with any motivational speaker, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't know, because I've always talked about, you know, if you're going to listen to somebody, you got to cherry pick what they say and what kind of works for you. I mean, I like some of the stuff that Gary Vee talks about, but I'm not a Gary Vee soldier like some people are, where they kind of take everything he says. Because sometimes he'll say things, I'm like, no, like that's kind of shock value. I kind of like Tony Robbins a little bit, but again, I don't like how much he charges to go see him. I think how are you helping people if you're charging people $5,000 to go to a conference? You know, but again, there are certain things that he says that I like. I think there's one person who's not well known, but I'll give him a shout out. His name is Rob Scott. And he talks about, he's not so much a motivational speaker, but he talks about the subconscious mind and how your mind is wired to keep you safe. And therefore that's why it's so hard, like, to lose weight, because your mind is keeping you safe. So it's keeping you out of the gym and it's keeping you eating those, you know, delicious foods because it makes you happy. He's somebody that I've met and we had a good conversation. And again, I mean, he's not famous or anything. But he should be, because he's got a great program. So I think somebody like that, a little more low key, who I think really hasn't forgotten what he's trying to do. Because I hope that if I ever gain anything close to the fame that those two other gentlemen have, that I won't forget, you know, why I was here, and I'm not charging exorbitant amounts to hear me speak. Because the point of this for me is to not necessarily be rich. I just want people to kind of understand my message.
No, I think that's important, that a guy like Rob, who may not have that household brand name, but they do have that household brand name of just being that common guy, having that common voice between the commoners, as they would say, and still can give back, in the sense that I can still be just like you, not trying to overcharge or have that shock value pokes, because that's what we're born to do, just connect with the common person. And sometimes when you go to that grind state of, hey, you're going to grind through this all with connections and not really screw anybody over and just be loyal and valuable to them, it sticks with you. And that's what really just makes a dynamic speaker. I'm sure in your speaking ways too, you have to stay like that just to get the best audience and retention, for sure. And our next question is your 5-year plan. And what are your goals in the next 5 years? Whether it be your speaking engagements, your marketing strategy, just anything you want to share with the information.
Sure. So I think for me, the next year is really, you got a party going on over there or what?
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. I'm sure your listeners heard my dog running around as well. So this is real life. We don't have a podcast studio to be in, so we're two real dudes. So I like that. But yeah, my 5-year plan is totally, I think, you know, I want to speak 5 times in the next school year, and I already have 2 gigs booked, probably another 2 or 3. So I'm going to hit that goal. I want the book to be done completely by the end of the year. It's already been started, but I'm still kind of working on it and doing interviews. So I want it to be done by the end of the year and probably published by this time next year. I think probably early 2019, I'm going to start working on an online course, and that's probably going to be 5 to 10 lessons, probably closer to 5, for high school seniors to kind of get ready for college. So that's right. Something that I've started to work on. I'm really excited about that. But I think past that, it's really just a matter of, you know, speaking, you know, five times a year to 10 times to 20 times. And eventually in 5 years, really be speaking 20 to 25 times in a school year. Definitely have a second book done, maybe even a third at that point. And definitely have an array of online courses and really just kind of build up. You know, I founded my own LLC called To the Next Step, obviously, as the same name as the book. And that's really what the LLC is going to incorporate is the speaking, the books, and the courses. And it's all going to be, you know, kind of driving towards the same message. And I'd like to see, you know, at that 5 year point, you know, me doing this on a full time basis with different, you know, generating different revenues of income. And I think 5 years is a good plan.
That's a good plan in 5 years, because at the end of the day, we're all looking for that next step, that next thing. And with you with the LLC, still giving back with the keynote speeches and just trying to basically make it come together in these next 5 years is the good plan. Because if you can just keep improving and honing in on your craft with the skills and trying new ideas at a young age, you'll feel more invigorated as you get older too. But our final question is always a fun one, is what is one thing you like to tell the Anchor Nation that they may not know about you?
Let's see. I already told you about my affection for hotel rooms, which somebody's going to text me and be like, why did you say that? I'm like, I don't know. I was just thinking about it the other day. One thing that they might not know about me. Well, one thing that a lot of people don't know about me, because I'm, you know, quote unquote articulate, is that, believe it or not, I went to kindergarten twice.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if anybody else could say that. I'm sure somebody in the world can, but I went through kindergarten twice. The first time around, I wasn't mature enough to move on, which to this day, I kind of think about that. I'm like, well, now I'm running my own business. And 26 years ago, I couldn't color within the lines, I guess. I have no idea. But yeah, love of hotel rooms, went to kindergarten twice, and I will tell a quick story for any of the football fans out there. The 2000 and I want to say 2004 draft, the one where Aaron Rodgers got drafted by the Packers. So I think that was 2004.
Yep, I think so.
I went with my dad and two of his friends. We got tickets through WFAN, a radio station around here, and somebody messed up somewhere along the way because the four of us sat in the section with the players' families. So was Aaron Rodgers' family, Alex Smith, Braylon Edwards, and somebody else. It was all their families in their suits and dresses because their kids were about to be drafted to the NFL, and the agents were coming over, and there was the four of us in Jets jerseys in the middle of them. And they didn't move us because they couldn't, because there was nowhere to move us to, because they were our tickets. But we were right smack in the middle of that for whatever reason. So I guess that's a fun story I like to tell people.
There you go. Next time you ever mess up and you get this incredible opportunity to meet your favorite sports star, just thank the people that messed up, because it's definitely there. But now, going back to more serious, that's interesting, Kyle, that you messed up in kindergarten. Now you run your own time. It always fascinates you in the sense that it's always good, of course, to take something from those early years. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you do in kindergarten. It's not how you start. It's really how you progress through the middle stages and then the finish at the end, which is a long way down the road. And then you really just start seeing that growth. So I 100% endorse that. It's been an honor to have you on the show, man. And before we go, you want to just DM your social media, though, so people can find you? I know you mentioned your Facebook page.
Sure. So on Facebook, you can find me, Kyle Rapone, youth motivational speaker. You can also follow me on Twitter at Kyle G Speaks, and Instagram is at Kyle G Speaks. My Instagram at the moment is private because I'm kind of cleaning up, not anything bad, but you know, there's right. it's a brand account now. So, you know, there's like 97 pictures of cheeseburgers and chicken wings on there. So I kind of have to start to take some of that down because, you know, it's going to be like, what does this guy do? He just eats junk food all the time. But yeah, those are my, and then my website, you know, the long form of the website is my name, KyleGrapone.com. But, you know, if you just go to KyleG.us, you will find my bio, my keynotes, my workshops, most importantly, a form. If you want to get in touch with me for any reason, whether it be, you know, you want me on your podcast, you want to talk about the book some more. You just want to kind of, you know, pick my brain, or you, if you think like, hey, you know what? I want to be interviewed for this book. I'd be good for it. You know, shoot me a message. Tell me why. Tell me what you're all about and what you could bring to the table. Cause you know, I'd love to get you involved. And of course, if you, you know, work at a school, a conference, a church, any kind of entity that speaks to high school or college students, and you want me to come and speak there, please reach out. Don't let money be any kind of issue. Even if you have no budget, please give me a call, because we can always kind of work something out. I don't ever want money to be the reason I can't help a student. So feel free to go to my website, kyleg.us, and fill out the contact form. Again, the book right now is available on pre-order. As of recording, we got about 26 pre-orders so far. We're trying to get to at least 100, because the more pre-orders I get, the better chance I get, better chance I have of landing a good publisher contract and, you know, really making a go at this thing. So you can learn all about the book. You can see my video, the synopsis, all that stuff at the link in the description. And of course, you can get the video on my website and click that red button, kyleg.us.
Beautiful. Yeah, I definitely have all those links and forms and all that jazz for the audience. And once again, thank you to the Anchor Nation for always giving your undivided attention, not only myself, but the interviewee. And Kyle, my friend, it's been a pleasure. Thank you again for so much insight, man.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, Anchor Nation. This is Kevin Touch of Anchor Nation Community Radio, and I'd like to say thank you for listening to the Anchor Nation podcast. If you'd like to book an interview or DM me on Instagram, follow me at the Anchor Nation. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, it is also under the Anchor Nation. Thank you for listening, and enjoy.